bomb, bomb, I ran.
Bomb, 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 I ran.
Some rocks, tell the Ayatollah gonna
put you in a box.
Texas, America, and the world. This is Mark Dankoff coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on RBN on this Friday, June 27th, 2025. Our topic today, how Ashura on the 10th of Muharram, commemorating what happened in Karbala in 681 AD, modern day Iraq, will make the Zionist government of the United States rue the recent attacks on Iran. This is something that not many of our listeners will be familiar with. I'm familiar with it only because I lived in Iran years ago for a series of summers when my parents were stationed there. And in the 1970s, I had the opportunity to be escorted to Karbala for a visit. And I had an opportunity to see the Imam Reza Shrine, where we have on your roadmap a current kickoff of Muharram. The first day of Muharram, in the way of a video provided by Middle East Spectator. It is quite something. And if you begin to understand exactly the significance of Karbala and Ashura in terms of Shia Islam theology and spirituality, you may begin to understand that this is just another reason why the Trump, Pete Hegseth, Marco Rubio, Lindsey Graham attacks on Iran in conjunction with Israel are an absolutely catastrophic mistake for the United States government to have made. You may be asking about the music that we opened the show with today. That music was actually posted by Donald Trump. Donald Trump, folks, the President of the United States, posting it in a mockery of Iran. We posted on the roadmap a number of different sources that I read internationally that posted this. One of them says U.S. President Trump posts music video making fun of unprovoked war of aggression launched on Iran. The video features a song many are calling Bomb Iran, quote unquote, celebrating another U.S. war of aggression predicted on deliberate lies, set to the tune of Barbara Ann by the Beach Boys. A tribute to the late neocon warmonger John McCain, who promoted the many forever wars Donald Trump was voted into office to end. This video was posted on President Trump's official account on Truth Social. Note, from this point forward, says this particular Russian blogger, if you defend the Trump administration, make excuses for it, you're dead to me. Intel Slava, of course, posted it as well. Ukraine Watch posted it as well. And then we get to something that I will be talking about. It's for some length as the show progresses, and that is what we opened with. What is Ashura? Where is Karbala? Who is the martyr Hussein? What really happened in AD 680-681 that has defined Shia Islam forever after? And what does that theology teach, and what does that theology mean in regard to what it is that the United States has just done to get themselves in over their heads in something that they don't understand with people who are motivated by this theology and spirituality, who will never quit, who will never give in, and who will never forget? a whole series of things, including Mr. Trump's assassination of General Soleimani in 2025, and these most recent crimes committed by both the United States government and Israel in flagrant violation of international law, not to mention the Constitution of the United States, in regard to Mr. Trump going ahead with these attacks and deliberately misleading Iran about the time frame for ongoing negotiations that were supposed to be taking place between the United States and Israel in direct negotiations, I believe in Doha, Qatar. The United States went ahead and sucker punched Iran 48 hours early. Kind of, if you would, an American version of what was pulled on the United States by Japan on December the 7th, 1941. So we will be getting into that story from Qatahan, penned for us by Dr. Zainab Mahana, as we attempt as Westerners, many of us as Christians, to really understand some of the deeper implications of this whole business of Ashura and what happened in Karbala in 680 A.D. Now, before we go any further with that, I'll go through a series of other news stories. Here is one that impacted me personally. Press Television has posted something entitled Crime Against Truth. The Saab Media Festival alumni condemned the Israeli attack on the Islamic Republic of Iran news network on June 16th. It is interesting that after I finished my last live broadcast for RBN, it was only a day or two later that I was featured in a segment on that very news network on television, broadcast throughout the Middle East, including Iran, in the English language, of course. I don't know if there were subtitles involved in the interview for people in Iran to read what I had to say in their own language or not. But suffice it to say that the fate of my scheduler on that network and the fate of the particular anchor who talked to me for 15 or 20 minutes are as yet unknown to me. What I do know is that there have been several Middle Eastern news sites that have published figures that would suggest that approximately 18 people lost their lives in this Israeli attack, deliberate attack on these journalists and on this news television studio. Scores were injured. CNN, after the fact, managed to publish an on-site report where one of their people was walking around inside the facility. I will get that on your roadmap so you can see the extent of the destruction inside of that TV studio that was working with me just a day or 2 days before the attack. So in this particular case, here we have a Republic Broadcasting Network connection to this international crime that happened on the 16th of June. Whereas we begin to study the chronology on this, I believe that they interviewed me on either the 14th or the 15th, just prior to these dreadful, dreadful things. So I'll come back to Dr. Mahana's story for Qatahan on Ashura here shortly, but let's do just a brief news summary for you of some of the other stories that our understanding will be enhanced for if we understand a little bit about the main topic through the lenses of what it is that Dr. Mahana has written for Qatahan on this religious subject that is also a political subject that pertains not simply to the end of the 7th century A.D., but it's just as current in 2025 as the Zionists and neocons are about to find out as they are alienating Shia Iran at the same time that they have been alienating and committing crimes against the Russian Orthodox Church and against Putin's Russia in Ukraine. And all that is left, I suppose, is to add the Chinese to this equation. And all of a sudden, all these geniuses that are running the foreign policy of this country, including someone apparently masquerading as the President of the United States, who is posting the kinds of videos on his own website that you listen to at the top of the hour. This is where we are, folks. Our lives are in the hands of these boobs, not to mention our sons and daughters and grandsons and granddaughters and so forth, who could well be inducted into military service in a world war as a result of these terrible, terrible events, which began on the 13th of June, culminated supposedly in the American attacks of the 22nd of June, and that nonetheless continue to smolder. And anyone who believes that this is the end of it in terms of this country's relationship with Iran, Israel's relationship with Iran, this dreadful genocide in Gaza, and all of the world community's alienation directed at both the United States and Israel is sadly mistaken. This is not going to go away. It is going to mushroom. Alistair Crookey for the Strategic Culture Foundation via Lou Rockwell has an excellent piece out there. You remember 2 weeks ago when I was spending a great deal of time on this show telling you about Peter Thiel and Alex Karp of Palantir Technologies, this intelligence firm with heavy links to the Israeli intelligence community and to the government of Israel that has been awarded by the Trump administration with a contract to create a database on every living American. That includes you and me. Think about it, folks. They crop up big time in participating in these illegal attacks by Israel and the United States on the Iranians. That Alistair Crook story for Strategic Culture Foundation via Lou Rockwell is on your roadmap. Read that at your leisure. Rafael Machado for Strategic Culture Foundation is writing about what I have been pointing to from the beginning of this show with the playing of Mr. Trump's Beach Boys video parody entitled Bomb Iran. Machado asks, will Trump's instability destroy Make America Great Again? These conflicts during Trump's first term, Machado says, ultimately worked in favor of globalists and against the populists who formed his core base. The symbolic victory of globalists over populists within the Trump administration was the terrorist assassination of General Qassem Soleimani, the mastermind behind Iran's geopolitical strategy in the Middle East, and one of the key figures responsible for the collapse, not the organization and the financing of ISIS, but for the collapse of ISIS. This is a critical story, and I think I will go ahead on this roadmap this weekend and add my own interview with Tasnim News Agency of Iran conducted in the immediate aftermath of the Soleimani assassination, where I believe I emphasized in that interview then that the ramifications of that act would continue to reverberate not simply for days or weeks or months, but for years and for decades. And here we are 5 years later. And Rafael Machado mentions this in the Strategic Culture Foundation story that he has written entitled, Will Trump's Instability Destroy Make America Great Again? And as we read through the Machado story, you will discover on your roadmap that he is basically indicating that with these illegal, reckless attacks on Iran conducted both by Netanyahu and by Trump, and in complete collaboration with one another, we might add, that the globalists win again in the Trump administration, which means that you and I lose as populist Americans who do not want another Middle Eastern war. We do not want anything more to do with Zelensky if we ever did. And frankly, we find our own government to be stirring up troubles that are absolutely reckless, that will get hundreds of thousands, potentially millions of people killed, not to mention the destruction of the United States and the deaths of many of our children and grandchildren. I want you to understand that if you're listening to me in this particular segment, that this is a serious business that we have embarked on, listening and reading as I have in the last week to some of these various respectable commentators whose names you will know. I think they agree with me that we have turned a corner on something that we are not going to be able to retreat from. Take a look at Mike Whitney for UNCE, Bullseye on Israel. Think that Trump and Netanyahu were not in complete collaboration on this? Think again. Read Mike Whitney's story for UNCE entitled Bullseye on Israel. Here's one that I took from Middle East Spectator. I took it because this gentleman is quoted by so many people in the responsible international media in regard to what he had to say in the aftermath of these so-called American airstrikes on Iranian nuclear facilities. This is one Dr. Jeffrey Lewis, professor at Middlebury Institute and staff at the James Martin Center of Nonproliferation Studies. Dr. Lewis says, quote, "Why am I so unimpressed by these strikes? Israel and the United States have failed to target significant elements of Iran's nuclear materials and production infrastructure. Rising Lion and Midnight Hammer are tactically brilliant, but may turn out to be strategic failures." Netanyahu's justification for conducting this strike was that Iran has produced enough highly enriched uranium for 9 atom bombs, quote unquote, 9. He refers to Iran's stockpile of 400 kilograms of 60% U-235, which, if further enriched, would be enough for 9 to 10 weapons. "Let's consider," says Dr. Lewis, "let's consider this. The 400 kg of HEU is largely stored in underground tunnels near the Isfahan uranium conversion facility. Despite extensive Israeli and U.S. attacks on the facility, there does not seem to have been any effort to destroy these tunnels or the material that was in them. No one even knows where the HEU is now. Rafael Grossi says Iran moved it. Marco Rubio says nothing can move in Iran, but trucks are moving in Iran. Trucks and heavy equipment showed up at least 2 days ago to seal the tunnels to protect them before the strikes, and there's visual evidence of this. Evidence that I have seen, folks. I have been shown these films. Trucks also showed up at the Fordow FEP the day before the strike, possibly to relocate sensitive equipment and certainly to cover these entrances with dirt. Iran just isn't a no-drive zone at the moment. To be fair, some of the Trump administration, says Lewis, do acknowledge Iran still has the enriched material. J.D. Vance says they're going to have conversations with the Iranians about it. As you read through this, folks, I'll leave the remainder of what we published on this technically from Dr. Lewis to your perusal, but understand this. Iran has retained 400 kilograms of 60% HEU, highly enriched uranium, the ability to manufacture centrifuges, and one or possibly two underground enrichment sites. That is also to say nothing of possible secret sites, which opponents of the JCPOA used to invoke all the friggin' time, says Dr. Lewis. Let's say that Iran decides to rush a bomb. Iran can install, say, 1.5 cascades a week. In 6 weeks, it could have 9 cascades of IR-6 machines. It would take those machines about 60 days to enrich all 400 kg to weapons-grade uranium. Altogether, that's about 5 months. 5 months. Rising Lion and Midnight Hammer have not slowed the Iranian program nearly as much as the JCPOA. We hold, says Dr. Lewis, diplomacy to much higher standards than bombing. The same people, Lewis says, who endlessly complained about the JCPOA sunsetting are now happy to delay Iran's bomb by much less. The real purpose was always regime change, quote unquote. We have been following, or I have been following, some of Reza Pahlavi's alleged activities in regard to this regime change situation. For those of you who are not familiar with him, he is the son of the former Shah of Iran between 1953 and 1979. I won't do anything with those particular activities or alleged activities today on this broadcast so we can get back to Ashura, but keep an eye on that one as well. New Rules publishes what Alexander Dugin thinks of all of this. Dugin drops a truth bomb. World War III has begun. Dugin says that the United States attack on Iran is a point of no return. Red lines, he asks. Gone first Israel hit Iran's nuclear sites. No consequences. Now America follows. Russia's next. Kiev's already tried attacking Russian nuclear facilities. The atomic taboo is broken. Shevkov's gun rule. If a nuke exists, it'll be used. Sergei Karganov warned us. Now it's happening. And then, of course, Dugin breaks this down in two phases. The globalist endgame. Two phases. Phase one. One world government by sovereignty. No borders, no gender, no identity, destroyed traditionalists, and he puts in parenthesis Russia, China, India, and Islam. We'll be back with phase two, and then we will get back to this whole business of Ashura and what happened in Karbala in 680-81 AD. Take care, and we'll be right back.
Are you really prepared? There's one critical piece most people forget. When disaster strikes, the most powerful survival tool isn't in your hands, it's in your head. But here's the hard truth. Knowledge disappears fast when the grid goes down. That's why we created the Preparedness Tablet, the first and only off-grid digital library designed specifically for survival situations. We've done the work for you. This rugged, portable tablet comes preloaded with a massive library of practical knowledge, food preservation and storage, emergency medical care, off-grid living and homesteading, security, defense, and more. It's indexed, searchable, organized, and powered by a free solar charger, so you'll never be without it. It also comes with a protective hard case, and you can upgrade it with supplemental survival files and EMP protection. Whether it's a power outage, social unrest, or a full-blown crisis, this tablet gives you instant access to skills that save lives. From treating wounds to growing food, even saving cherished family documents and photos, this preparedness tablet is your silent partner when things go sideways. You can't know it all, but you can carry it with you. Preloaded with survival knowledge, runs 100% off-grid, backup and store your own files, lightweight, portable, and solar-powered. Join thousands of Americans closing the last gap in the emergency prep. Visit our website now and get peace of mind in the palm of your hand. The preparedness tablet also makes a thoughtful and potentially life-saving gift. Invest in yourself, protect your family. Visit www.comcoms.link. That's www.comcoms.link. Be ready, be smart, be the one who plans ahead. We also offer custom portable radios that come pre-configured for your local area. Included with these versatile radios is free basic training to get you up to speed quickly on how to use your radio. Visit our website today and learn all about our unique products. Comcoms.link. comcoms.link.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
I can't hold it on the road when you're sitting right beside me, and I'm drunk out of my mind merely from the fact that you are here. And I have not been known as the saint of San Joaquin, and I'd just as soon right now pull on over to this side of the road and show you what I mean. La da 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 da. La da 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 da. July, you're a woman more than anyone I've ever known.
We are back. You are listening to the Dan Koff Report on RBN Live on this 27th of June, 2025. We began at 1 p.m. Central Time. It is now 1:24 p.m. Central Time. Our main topic, which we have just scratched the surface of, I'm going to get to it here shortly after the brief news summary, is an article by Dr. Zainab Mahana from Katahan, which is a Russian publication. But you can read it in the English language. You can read it, obviously, in addition to Russian, in French or German, maybe some other languages as well. But I subscribe to the English version, lot of fascinating stuff you simply cannot get virtually anywhere in Western media. On the roadmap, I have posted a photograph of this article. It's entitled Ashura, The Philosophy of Martyrdom and a Way of Life Between Existential Formation and Contemporary Politics. That's Dr. Zainab Mahana. And if you get a chance, it's not a long article, but in conjunction with what I have posted in terms of this video for a Middle East Spectator, that gives you an idea of the atmosphere in Karbala, Iraq, on this month of Muharram, leading up to Ashura this year, the 10th of Muharram, which this year falls on our 6th of July. It will give you some insight as to the psyche and the spirituality of Shia Islam, the absolute dedication of the Iranian nation to Shia Islam as their state religion. And I believe the declaration of Shia Islam as their state religion maybe only goes back to the 15th century. I'll have to check my friend Dilip Hero on this, who was on my show on this network years ago, and whose volumes continue to inform us in regard to virtually anything Middle Eastern. His book, The Iranian Labyrinth, is well worth your time. If you're looking for a single one-volume dictionary on all of these different topics in the Middle East, get this one, The Essential Middle East, A Comprehensive Guide, Dilip Hero, H-I-R-O. And in this particular case, you'll come to virtually anything you would want to know is a briefing on the Middle East. Now, this book is a little dated now. I don't know if he has since issued an update, but so much of what is in here is as fresh as it was when it was published. And, of course, Mr. Hero writes for the Washington Post, The Nation, The Wall Street Journal, The L.A. Times, and the list of his accomplishments and his publications and his affiliations are endless. We were quite fortunate to get him on my show on the Republic Broadcasting Network some 18 years ago. This particular case, we will go back briefly, and I will simply say that if you get a chance to look at some writings on the subject of Shiism, I've posted the book cover from a book I picked up in Iran at the time I visited Karbala in Iraq. It's entitled Shiism, and it's written by an S. Ghaffari. If you can still find that book in print anywhere, get it. And in this particular case, one of the things that you may well be worth your time is to visit Karbala, even in this day and age, and to take a look at the incredible shrine there, the incredible mosque there, where all of these events will be taking place leading up to our 6th of July. By the way, a Middle East Spectator ran a poll. Do you believe Fort Dow was destroyed? This has been coming up in our news constantly. Gee, how successful were we with our bunker-busting bombs and getting everything that we had to get? I would believe Dr. Lewis, not any of these people, including Hegseth, that are in the American media right now, but at least in terms of Middle East Spectator on this anonymous poll, 84% believe that Fort Dow was not destroyed. Only 16% of the people in this poll believe the American story, the current American story about how effective these airstrikes were. In this particular case, I have read enough on this on your behalf in the last week that I'm absolutely convinced that what we are seeing in Washington right now and in the American news media is not a CIA operation, but a CYA operation. And I'll leave it to you to figure out what Y means and what C means in this context. Cover YA. Cover your... You get the idea. So that's where we are in this particular time as we get briefly to a couple of other things. And then I want to get back, before I do take a caller, to this Mahana story for Catahan. One of the things, by the way, that we did not mention when we went to the break, phase two of Alexander Dugin's understanding of things that are happening in phase two of his understanding of these things, AI will replace humanity. Nukes will wipe out the obsolete.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Don't regret growing old. It's a privilege denied to many. Heart disease is taking our youth from us. Young people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond are dying needlessly. One of the hardest messages I've ever had to deliver is to convince people that something natural like Extendivite should be taken as a preventative measure. I'm sure you heard, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Extendivite is that ounce. Take Extendivite for 1 year and see what your doctor has to say and how much better you feel. Herbs take time to address the problem. It took years of life to have a problem. Give Extendivite 1 year to fix the problem. Don't wait until it's too late. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or visit us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Did you know the IRS publicly admits that income tax is collected by voluntary compliance? Get the information you need to help you avoid income tax with these 5 easy steps. All you have to do is go to avoidincometax.com to get your 5 easy steps on how to avoid the IRS income tax. Escape the IRS. Let avoidincometax.com help you. We guarantee our 5 easy steps or your money back. Go to avoidincometax.com.
Susanna's Secret Real Essential Oils of Nature would like to thank you and RBN listeners for your previous purchases. We're announcing that we have a new waterless diffuser in stock with a full 1 year warranty. You just insert the bottle to the top, screw it in, tip it upside down, set your timer, or it's also motion activated at furion.com. That's furion.com. That's furion.com.
Their face is gaunt, their eyes were blurred, and shirts all soaked with sweat. They're riding hard to kids that hurt, but they ain't caught them yet. Cause they got to ride forever on that range up in the sky, on horses snorting fire, as they ride on, hear their cry.
We are back. You've been listening to Eddie Arnold. Long time ago, Ghost Riders in the Sky, as I've said before on this network many times, he redefined the post-World War II country music industry. He is the only man in history to have been elected to the Country Music Hall of Fame before becoming the CMA's very first Entertainer of the Year. Eddie Arnold entered the Country Music Hall of Fame when he was only 48 years old, by the way. That tells you something. And going back into some of his early Western recordings, you'll see that someone years ago tried to describe his style as a mix of Gene Autry and Perry Como. That's an interesting observation. And nonetheless, in this troubled world that we live in, listening to Eddie Arnold's old Western ballads, or certainly some of his love ballads over many years, takes us back to an earlier and better time in this country. Let me briefly say a couple of other things, and I do want to briefly look at this Catahan article on Ashura, and then hopefully we can get some callers in before the end of the hour. Looking at this whole business then of Dugan and his discussions of the beginning of World War II, or World War III, I'm sorry, World War II ended 80 years ago, or so we thought. Dugan, in Phase 2, says that AI will replace humanity, so-called singularity. Nukes will wipe out the obsolete, quote-unquote, Trump's betrayal, question mark. MAGA was supposed to stop globalism and wars, halt migration, crush LGBTQ ideology. For a moment it worked. Then Israel hit Iran. Then Trump joined in. Now America's at war. World War III is live. The globalist's new trick? Fake nationalism. Fake nationalism. They couldn't beat nationalism, so they hijacked it. Trump? Useful idiot. Netanyahu? Perfect battering ram. Ukraine? Neo-Nazi testing ground. Russia's move? Listen to this, folks. No more peace-loving cat diplomacy. The West wants nukes flying. What Russia needs is a new ideology. Ruthless, unapologetic power, total war readiness. Strike first if needed before they do. This isn't fear-mongering, says Dugan. It's reality. World War III is here. Think that the Russians did not notice the implications of what Netanyahu and Trump did? They certainly have recognized it, which is why Colonel McGregor is absolutely correct in the next story we posted. And that is that Mr. Trump's launching of these idiotic, unconstitutional, reckless, and illegal attacks will be yet another day of infamy. Take a look at what Colonel McGregor tells us about this. Press TV, of course, on June 24th, 3 days ago, says that U.S. intelligence contradicts Trump, says Iran's nuclear sites are intact after the attacks. That would tend to be corroborated by Patrick Lawrence at the UNS Review. Please read that story that we posted for you, completely and totally obliterated. New Rules has a discussion of what this really cost Israel in money, $17.8 billion at least, and maybe counting, a brain drain from Israel, and strategic failure. Read that summary of that New Rules story, and you will understand that it dovetails quite well with Patrick Lawrence and with Colonel McGregor and with Alexander Dugan and with Jeffrey Lewis, Dr. Jeffrey Lewis. Don't believe this bunk that you're seeing on American television right now, folks, in regard to these attacks. The fact of the matter is that CENTCOM did not originally affirm any of this. The Defense Intelligence Agency contradicted this stuff. Gabbard's analysis is the head of the National Intelligence Division. Her people were telling her a different story from the one that we're now seeing Donald Trump and Pete Hegseth talking about on television. You decide who's telling the truth. I've already decided who I think is telling the truth. And it ain't Donald Trump, and it ain't Pete Hegseth, and it certainly is not that cupcake Lindsey Graham that we all wish would simply go away. By the way, Dugan has a podcast on Substack, Postmodernism and Messianic Apocalypse on the Iran-Israel War, or Israel-Iran War. It's a little over 50 minutes long. I posted it for you. Listen to that if you get a chance. It is well worth your time. Finally, posted something on this dreadful attack on this Orthodox Church in Syria so that we don't leave that completely out of the news summary. And then, of course, Temple Mount Pete Hegseth, I posted a review of some of the background material on who he really is that managed completely not to be covered during his confirmation hearing where he was confirmed by one vote. So let's go back just for a minute, and then I'll take some callers. Let's go back to the story that I think defines this show, at least, and that is Ashura. Ashura. Now, we've already discussed the fact that Ashura is something that is observed in Shia Islam on the 10th day of the month of Muharram, which in our calendar varies from year to year. This year it's on the 6th of July. And when you start getting into what it is that Zainab Mahena, Dr. Zainab Mahena, tells us in this very brief but useful post for the lay persons in this subject, which includes me, by the way, this Catahan outlet did a good job of including this article. And then, of course, Dilip Hero, if you look up what he says about Ashura in his Essential Middle Eastern Dictionary, and that begins in terms of this topic on page 53, it will be well worth your time in terms of expanding a knowledge of the people that we have double-crossed in this situation of nuclear power. By the way, Mr. Trump is wrong. Iran has the absolute right to nuclear enrichment. The Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty that they were a signatory to guaranteed them that. Thanks to these airstrikes, they're in the process of getting out of the NPT, which will equalize things with Israel, which never joined, because Israel didn't want anyone looking at their weaponized nuclear program. A program that, if you read Michael Collins Piper's final judgment, they assassinated John F. Kennedy to get. Okay, Dr. Zainab Mahena for Catahan. Let's take a look at this particular story. He explains to us that this is a theology of the afterlife. Those of you who are Christians and who have various eschatologies that have been recognized in the history of the Christian religion, there we are talking about amillennialism, historic premillennialism, dispensational premillennialism, which governs almost all of these Christian Zionists, so to speak, and then postmillennialism. Well, we're starting to get into the eschatologies of various elements in the Islamic faith, and in this case, the Ashura deals with the Shia eschatology as it relates not simply to the life that is to come, but as it relates to the present day. This is something I want you to understand, because Shia eschatology is not simply a question of what they believe they will receive as a personal reward in the life that is to come, but it is a cosmic enactment of justice. The martyrdom is not simply tied to the afterlife, Mahena explains to us, but it is a cosmic enactment of justice. Dr. Mahena stresses in this article that the martyr does not merely earn paradise. And this next phrase is, this next sentence, part of this sentence is key. He participates in the reconstitution of divine justice in the world, the present world. As Allama Tabatabai expresses in his exegesis of those who are, quote, slain in the path of God, unquote. Slain in the path of God. The martyrdom of Hussein in Karbala in 680 or 681 AD was not an ending, but the genesis, Mahena explains, of what philosophical discourse calls the quote-unquote teleological human, the being who offers his body in sacrifice for a value that is greater than material survival. I want you to think about that for a minute. I suppose there are elements in what I just read to you, based upon this very fine article on Ashura, penned for us by Dr. Zainab Mahena, elements of this that would coincide with Russian Orthodox Christian, Eastern Christian eschatology, which would explain the advantage that the Russians and the Iranians both have over a post-Christian United States and a post-Christian Western world. What values do we have in this country now in the United States? I'm not talking about every person who lives here, but what are the prevailing values in the United States and the Western world now? A post-Christian decadence, sexual perversion, consumerism, multinational corporate power, greed and avarice and a narcissistic culture that knows nothing higher than what every individual believes that he or she can get for themselves at the expense of everyone else. That's a rather harsh evaluation, but a lot of people would say that about the post-Christian West. Whereas both in Eastern Orthodox Christianity, especially the Russian Orthodox version, but also now in Shia Islam, going all the way back to 680 AD and the events in Karbala, we understand the martyrdom of Hussein was not an ending, but the genesis of what philosophical discourse calls the quote-unquote teleological human, the being who offers his body in sacrifice for a value greater than material survival. From this standpoint, the philosophy of Ashura emerges not as a mere reaction to oppression, but as a reconfiguration of being itself. Martyrdom is no longer the conclusion of life, but the inauguration of moral and political existence. Think of that one. The philosophy of martyrdom. When death becomes an existential act, martyrdom in the Karbala paradigm is not an escape from death, but a conscious, volitional embrace of it as a testimony to truth. Imam Hussein ibn Ali was not simply killed, he offered himself as a sacred oblation. This act situates his martyrdom within the domain of existential ethical thinking akin to quote-unquote dying for the other. In the philosophies of Soren Kierkegaard, I understand the Danes would say Kierkegaard, Paul Tillich is mentioned here, Levinas, and even Heidegger, albeit through his ontological analysis of being toward death. In this schema, martyrdom is not an annihilation, but the existential fulfillment of the complete human, one who attains the apex of moral becoming. Karbala thus becomes a true existential myth, in Paul Ricoeur's sense of the quote-unquote mythos that reveals, not the myth that deceives. And again, as I'm reading this, I hope you get back to taking a look on the roadmap at that video that Middle East Spectre, or Spectator, sent to me on the events that have now begun to take place in Karbala at the special mosque there leading up to Ashura on the 6th of July or the 10th of Muharram, to get some idea of the thinking of people who are mentally, spiritually, and physically, and willfully dedicated to martyrdom for the sake of justice in this life and reward in the next. A few airstrikes are not going to scare these people, folks, out of existence. The Iraqis found that out over 8 years in the Iran-Iraq War. More casualties than in any war since the end of World War II. The Iranians fought under great difficult circumstances to a draw that did save their nation. Now we're talking about a situation in all the years since then where they have capabilities at their fingertips that have the globalists extremely worried, the globalists and the Zionists, the people that Donald Trump is really working for, not the nationalists and populists who voted for him. We'll go on just here for a second with what it is that Dr. Mahana has in this article in his introduction to Ashura as a formative event beyond history. Think of this one, folks. In Shia eschatology, martyrdom is not simply tied to the afterlife as a mere personal reward, but as a cosmic enactment of justice. The martyr does not merely earn paradise, he participates in the reconstitution of divine justice in the world, as Allama Tabatabai expressed in his exegesis of those who were, quote, slain in the path of God. Ashura, Lebanon 2024, being in the face of nothingness, the 2024 war between Hezbollah and Israel, sparked in solidarity with Gaza, was not merely a military confrontation, but a contemporary reenactment of Ashura's metaphysics. Fighters marched under the banner, quote, "We shall never abandon you, O Hussein." A declaration not only of religious allegiance, but of existential identification with a model of humanity that embraces death to preserve a world capable of justice. A model of humanity that embraces death to preserve a world capable of justice. Here, the support of the predominantly Sunni Palestinian people by Shia fighters becomes a philosophical manifestation of pan-Islamic unity. In southern Lebanon, the Shia community did not mourn the martyrs as victims, but celebrated them as victors in existential struggle. Death did not erase the self, it affirmed it. Thus, each funeral became a quote-unquote philosophical scene of moral immortality. A testimony to death is generative of meaning, not absurdity. Iran 2025. War under the light of a Shurik formation. The ongoing conflict between Iran and Israel reveals the deep integration of Ashura's philosophy into political and spiritual discourse. Iranian leadership, particularly Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei, reframes politics not as a realm of pragmatic calculation, but of sacred duty. Taklif, a notion that truth is not a political strategy, but a post-worldly imperative. The Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps are not merely soldiers, but the heirs of Hussein, engaged in what French philosopher Michael Henry might call cosmic embodiment, a bodily immersion in spiritual combat within the moral time of the world. Ashura thus remains an open existential language, a grammar through which nations interpret their present and craft their spiritual and political covenant. Minus John Hagee of Cornerstone Church in San Antonio, of course. I added that, folks. Okay. Thus, the deaths of Iranian military leaders, 30 generals, by the way, that I have listed each of their names in my private notes as I was getting ready for this show, are not cast as military losses, but as, quote, formative ascensions to the station of eternity, unquote, as articulated by Iran's Tasnim news agency in June of 2025. Those are the folks who interviewed me 5 years ago in the aftermath of the Soleimani assassination. Martyrdom as a reconfiguration of time enables us to understand that Ashura teaches that time is not linear, but cyclical. This, of course, is something in Shia Islam that is not true in Christianity in regard to the linear character of time. I want to make that clear. But what transpired at Karbala recurs whenever injustice is met with silence. This explains why Karbala is echoed in Iraq, Yemen, Lebanon, and Palestine. The martyrs are not repetitions, quote-unquote, but contemporary manifestations of an eternal existential archetype. In Iraq, this is embodied in popular slogans like, quote, "Every land is Karbala, every day is Ashura." And in Yemen, with Ansar Allah's battle cry, "We bow only to God," quote-unquote. These are not merely mobilizing chants, says Mahana, but philosophical declarations. Every moment of injustice resurrects Karbala, compelling the individual toward the Karbalaic choice. The Karbalaic choice. Shia society from ritual community to formative collective. Ashura has transformed Shia communities from ritualistic congregations into interpretive existential societies, to use Paul Tillich's framework, communities that read existence through the lens of sacred death. Read about this in terms of Lebanon, Iraq, and Yemen, and now in the conflict over both Gaza and the American-Israeli attacks on Iran that have taken place this month. Think about that, folks. The conclusion, we are told by Dr. Mahana, is this: from Karbala to the human of the hereafter, Ashura is not merely a political revolt or a social uprising. It is the manifestation of the human being who chooses meaning over survival. Meaning over survival. It reconstructs universal values upon the foundation of free ethical action and elevates humanity to the rank of the cosmic martyr, quote-unquote, the one who does not perish, but inaugurates a new moral temporality. For the martyrs of the axis of resistance, Mahana reminds us, death is not an end, but the commencement of a new mission within the moral time of the world. Ashura thus remains an open existential language, a grammar through which nations interpret their present and craft their spiritual and political covenant. Do we understand that in a post-Christian West? With LGBTQ, multinational corporate power and corruption, political manipulation and deviousness, wars for empire, wars for stealing other people's natural resources, the development of domestic police states in the West in order to enforce what is essentially a godless construct, with the death of the Christian West and its replacement with an absolute nihilism and narcissism. This is what I argue is going to be the biggest problem for the United States and for Israel in dealing both with what we see of Putin's Russia and the resurrection and revival of a post-communist Russian Orthodox theology and spirituality as it informs the people and as it informs their desire to defend the sovereignty of their nation against Globo Homo and Zio world government. And so we see the same thing now with Iran and Shia Islam, and the absolute importance of understanding that with the commemoration of Ashura on the 10th of Muharram, which is our 6th of July coming up, the philosophy of martyrdom is a way of life. Existential formation, eschatological dimensions, and also contemporary politics. Putting that in its proper perspective, whether you're talking about the people who horribly lost their lives in this Islamic Republic of Iran News Network TV studio on the 16th of June, just a day or two after they had interviewed me on that show, or we are talking about the people who have lost their lives in Gaza and in southern Lebanon and at the hands of a horrible regime in Syria installed by the West, Representative Wahhabic Sunni Islam, or that we're talking about all of these deaths of innocents in Iran and the attempt to destroy them as a nation and to deny them an ability to track their own destiny free of this world government, the same people that Putin is fighting in Ukraine as he continues to roll up victory after victory against a guy by the name of Zelensky, who's about ready to hang it up. This is where we are headed, folks. And I conclude this, that the United States is on the wrong side of history in this situation. And that if we think we had trouble in Vietnam or with Bush's war on terror, Trump and what he has done has absolutely ripped it for the United States in terms of making America great again, in terms of having a legitimate nationalism or populism in the United States to replace the horrors of world government and Zionism. He has also set in motion a course of action that I believe will result in a tragic war for American citizens and American youth that will lead us to perhaps the final turning point in human history. Please read this article by Zainab Mahana, which I posted for you, Ashura, the philosophy of martyrdom and a way of life. I'll see you next week on the Republic Broadcasting Network. God bless.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau de Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com, or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.